Morning will be Workhouse Media versus Ventresca and Cheryl. Morning, counsel. Rebuttal time?
3 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Okay. Proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Robin Schaffner, and I represent appellants in this matter. Appellants ask this court to reverse the granting of summary judgment because the trial court granted summary judgment in error for three reasons. One, the trial court did not perform the requisite analysis in determining if the Washington choice of law provision in the subject agreements was effective. Two, had the trial court performed that analysis, it would have found that California law, and specifically the Talent Agencies Act, which I will refer to as short as the TAA, was in fact controlling law. And three, under the TAA, the California Labor Commissioner has exclusive original subject matter jurisdiction to hear all disputes concerning the TAA in order to determine the effect of the TAA on the dispute. For each of these reasons, the trial court did not have subject matter jurisdiction to determine the effect of the TAA and did not have subject matter
jurisdiction. Trial court had subject matter jurisdiction. Question is, did it apply the wrong law?
Even if we take that as true, Your Honor, then under the TAA, it is clear that this contract was indeed void. So I will go through the reasons that I believe that the TAA is applicable, even if that subject matter jurisdiction argument isn't well taken by the court. In the matter of Irwin v. Cotter, the Supreme Court of Washington.
Well, let me be clear for the point of your argument. The court has subject matter jurisdiction under our Constitution to determine contract challenges. That's clear. Your argument is the TAA precludes the application of Washington law. Under the choice of law, California law would prevent enforcement of the contract. That doesn't deprive the court of subject matter jurisdiction.
Under the TAA expressly states that the California Labor
Trust me on that.
I do, Your Honor. I absolutely trust you. And that's why I'm going to go to the issue of how, if California law were applied by the Washington court, how that would have come out, Your Honor. So under Irwin v. Cotter, the Supreme Court of Washington has stated that Section 187 of the Restatement Second of Conflicts is the requisite analysis to be performed to determine if a Washington choice of law provision is effective. Under that analysis, the court is to pose three questions. One is, as it relates to applying the TAA, is application of Washington law contradictory to a fundamental public policy of California? Two, does California have a materially greater interest in resolution of the contract validity issue than Washington?
Well, let's start there.
Yes.
Your clients contacted Workhouse and retained him for professional services.
Actually, Workhouse contacted my clients and sought them out specifically to have them retain him.
And I welcome you to point that out in the record because the record's very thin, and I don't find that there. So we have a contract in Washington involving a Washington party with a Washington choice of law, with no allegations of overreaching, duress, or anything else that would void the contract. And so the reliance is strictly on other states' law applies. And Washington has an interest in enforcing the contracts of people who do business here, don't they?
They do.
And the second thing is the contract did not specify or require work to be done in California. It was open-ended. So could we, if the job placement and the contracts that Workhouse placed were in New York instead of California, could you argue that because this was a contract that involved California law and California could have been the place of negotiation, the contract was void?
California was always expressly the place of negotiation.
It's not in the contract.
Well, the WHM respondents concede that both Cheryl and Ventresca are California residents. There is information in the record that all work to be performed by Ventresca and Cheryl under the negotiated agreements was to occur in California, which required communication with California. entities. So all of the communications relating to this agency agreement was the brokering of a deal between California residents and California entities.
Now, the contract, though, is a contract for professional services that could have occurred anywhere with a Washington resident entity. So in terms of the state's interest looking at the bare contract, how do you say that California has a more material interest in the contract than Washington, or that California has a more material interest in the enforcement or non-enforcement of the contract than Washington?
I believe that it's necessary to look beyond the exact language of the agency agreement, because the issue here is a motion for summary judgment. And when we're looking at the fundamental policy of a state, we look not only at the contract at issue, but that contract's relation to the performance of that contract and its relation to the state whose law we're seeking to have applied. If I may, this court, in the matter of Hillcrest Media LLC v. Fisher, it's an unpublished case, and I want to be clear about that, specifically stated that the brokering of an agreement between a Washington corporation and another Washington corporation by an Arkansas entity implicated that Washington law should be applied, not Arkansas law. And that's very similar to what we have here. Here we have a Washington entity brokering a deal between two California entities, specifically related to the rendering of talent services, which is heavily regulated by the state of California for very important reasons. One of them being that California makes approximately $300 billion a year of its gross domestic product on talent-related services. So it's important and fundamental to California to regulate the manner in which its resident talent is being treated and the agreements that they enter into.
This case doesn't involve any issues about the mistreatment of talent, however.
Well, actually,
the case in front of us does not.
Well, there were cross-claims that I'm sure Your Honors
know
were
dismissed. They're not in front of us.
But that does not necessarily mean that the dismissal of the cross-claims, that the allegations therein are not founded. There are allegations that Mr.
But they're not appealed and they're not in front of us.
Well, the mere fact that a party chooses not to proceed with counterclaims does not mean that they're not permitted to raise those issues in the future. I mean, that's a strategic decision that appellants made regarding whether or not to pursue counterclaims.
But for purposes of summary judgment, even if we accept that California law, which is completely opposed to Washington, and accept that it's a change it's a conflict of significant public policy for California, why is the enforcement of the contract materially more important to California than Washington?
Because California has a greater interest in transactions that occur solely within their state, Your Honor. This transaction occurred, even by Mr. Anderson's own admission, he says that some of the work was performed out of state, presumably in California. And we have facts in the record to demonstrate that all of the negotiations occurred between California entities. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Arnie Willig on behalf of the respondent, Workhouse Media, Inc., who is the plaintiff below. Just to pick up
on... How can Workhouse not figure out that it needs to be registered in California to do work in California?
Well, as the Court pointed out, it does work all over the country. And what had occurred in this instance is...
We're not enforcing work anywhere other than claims for work done in California.
Well, that's the underlying contract that was negotiated. The contract itself between these artists and Workhouse was a California or a Washington contract done by a Washington corporation. For the most part, the work, the negotiation, was done right here in Washington, in Seattle. Now, these parties, these artists have now claimed, well, we don't think that the work that you did was appropriate, and what they did in response to this lawsuit was bring counterclaims. So they not only subjected themselves to this court or to the King County Court's jurisdiction by contract, but also by alleging these counterclaims that the court considered and dismissed. So
when you say the work was done here, I assume in the absence of like meetings, which I wasn't clear about the extent of that on the record, most of it would be getting on the phone and talking to somebody in California, right, or sending an email to somebody in California. Why isn't the work being equally done on both sides? Or is it just the work that the Workhouse folks are doing?
It is the work. For the most part, the work, the negotiations are done by Workhouse in Seattle, and it's not just California. It also involves New York. These artists' original contract were with CBS Radio. Mm. That contract, done in 2011, was negotiated by Workhouse here in Seattle, for which these artists then paid the 8% commission per year. When their contract was coming up, they expressed an interest in working for iHeartRadio. Workhouse then engaged in negotiations with Workhouse or with iHeart, got them a 5-year no-cut deal.
Yeah, the facts aren't really the issue here. You haven't defended on the basis that the contract negotiations were really with CBS, headquartered in New York, incorporated in Delaware. That's not the defense. The defense is I did the work here, and some of it may have been in California.
Exactly right. Some of the work, some of the negotiations, and there should be no dispute about that. When Workhouse Media is engaging in negotiations, it's doing it with parties who are located in California, CBS, parties who are CBS headquarters is in New York. They have final approval of the contract. iHeartRadio, which I believe is based somewhere in Texas or has a Texas connection. Mm-hmm. But that was certainly contemplated by the parties. In fact, if you were to look at the agency agreement, Mr. Anderson and Workhouse provides for travel expenses to be paid, that the artist has to incur the expense from their end for the necessary travel that's required to negotiate these contracts.
Okay, so there's no question that negotiations were conducted with persons who were in California when the negotiations occurred, that there was some travel to California and that the contracts involved employment in California.
Well, the contracts could have involved employment elsewhere. They could have been anywhere. It just so happens that this deal was coming about through California. The issues that the artists raised by way of their counterclaims was they didn't understand what a right to match clause was in their existing contract. And after this contract with iHeartRadio elevated their duration and their base salary, CBS picked up the phone and essentially said, we will match that contract word for word. And as Discovery indicated during the case, it was approved by CBS in New York. The increases were made, and the artist then signed that agreement. And then at that point, they decided not to pay Workhouse the commission and then use this.
We understand that. The California law would, as submitted, would appear to say if this action were initiated by your client in California, it would be unenforceable.
Well, that's correct.
You concede that.
What they're attempting to do is use this as a shield to pay the commission. They're making a circular argument that
right. If
California law applies, then California licensing applies, and under California licensing, unless you're licensed, you can't collect a commission.
So they would like to use the California law to shield them from having to make payments on a contract that otherwise appears valid and enforceable and selected Washington law. So
Correct. Why
does Washington have a materially more significant interest in this contract than California under the choice of law analysis?
Well, the choice of law analysis it includes an inquiry as to whether or not the parties had contemplated such an event and whether one state's interest is greater than the others. What the artists are saying is, California has a deep and steeped in the entertainment industry. Likewise, Washington does, maybe not as much. For whatever reason, and frankly, the reason being that Mr. Anderson's commission is less in Washington than it would be if he were licensed in California, perhaps for whatever reason, but that was something that the parties had negotiated. The amount of the commission, likewise, the choice of law and venue provision were negotiated provisions. So here we have a Washington corporation, again, doing business in Washington, for which one side of the other side of the contract is saying, well, we want to now renegotiate that on appeal by striking that provision that was negotiated. Again, as the trial court astutely pointed out, this is not a complex contract. It's 2 pages. Virtually every word is pretty understandable. These artists realize that if there was a deal that they agreed to for employment, they owed Workhouse the 8% commission.
And if we're going to apply the 3 factors of the choice of law test, then you need to persuade us that at least one of them fails, or California law says they get to stiff you.
Sure. I think what the court's referring to is the restatement with respect to the conflicts of law. That's section 188. One of the analysis is the place of contracting. Clearly, that was here. The contract was signed in Seattle by a Seattle corporation, and again, enforceable under the terms of Washington law. The place of negotiation, for the most part, was done in Seattle. Mr. Anderson did his work on behalf of Workhouse, for the most part, and I think the record is clear on that, in Seattle. The place, again, that also goes to the place of performance of the contract, where he was doing the work on behalf of these artists right here. The subject matter of the contract was an employment contract that these artists are now performing in California. Nevertheless, Mr. Anderson would have negotiated a contract had it been performed in Miami or New York or Dallas or any of the other mm-hmm. media markets that these artists would have agreed to or would have worked in. Next, we have the domicile, residence, nationality, place of incorporation, and place of business of the parties. Here, it's really a split. It's Seattle for half, and these artists are residents of California, and they're performing their services in California. And again, this is not a non-exhaustive list. I think at this point we have to look to the parties' actions, which are they're claiming that the California Talent Agency Act should apply so that they can use California law to say the services that Mr. Anderson performed were he was negligent in performing those services. Well, if we are to look behind that, they had a chance to air those grievances. They brought those claims up to the Superior Court. The court considered that evidence and dismissed them. And now essentially what they're asking for is they want to hit the reset button and say, you know, at least from what I can tell in their briefs, that the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction and therefore should not have heard any of these claims. That said, Your Honor, we'd respectfully ask that the...
Well, we've got the contract. We've got a summary judgment. So we've got Workhouse saying Anderson signed a contract in Washington. The other side saying they signed it in California. They say they never came to Washington. Anderson says, well, I didn't do much work in California, some of it maybe, but most of it here. We're on balance. We're in summary judgment. Should it have been dismissed, or should there have been a trial to deal with the choice of law issue?
No, Your Honors. I mean, the choice of law issue is really is frankly a red herring. Even if they were to say, even if they had presented admissible evidence that said they signed the contract in California and Mr. Anderson said he signed it in Seattle, it wouldn't make any difference to the outcome of this dispute. The contract would still be enforceable. Certainly they can agree to terms with a Washington corporation that applies Washington law. Again, it's the law of Washington, or the choice of law that the parties decided on is not foreign to either of them. It does have a relationship and a nexus to certainly to the party doing the most work of performing the contract, which is the agent. He's the one doing the heavy lifting, negotiating the employment contracts, and he's doing that from here in Washington. We ask that the court's decision be upheld. Thank you, Your Honors.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to set the time.
You might have had extra time if you had not.
I'll be fine with three. thank you, Your Honors. Respondents have tried to tell this court that the issue of choice of law is a red herring, but this is actually an important issue before this court today. If the court elects to affirm summary judgment, it's sending a message to parties that even where a particular state's law would have been applicable, you can avoid your obligations under that law by the simple inclusion of a choice of law provision.
Well, wouldn't the message be don't sign it with a choice of law provision you don't agree with?
Well, so that I understand your point, Your Honor. If you look at the case of Irwin v. Cotter, which is the seminal case on this issue, the court actually, I believe, reached its conclusion because the contract there expressly stated, I am not licensed in California. You waive any right to contest fees because I am not licensed in California. And I would urge the court to reach the conclusion that that is why the Irwin v. Cotter case came down the way that it did. That and Mr. Cotter was not a California resident. So, you know, in this instance, if we go through the factors, it appears that respondents have rested their case on the most significant relationship test set forth in Section 188. And we agree that there is a split. So when it comes as to place of contracting and place of negotiation, but place of performance and place of subject matter, we believe firmly come down in favor of California law. The subject matter of this contract can be viewed several different ways, really. It can be viewed as the actual negotiating of the agreements. It can be viewed as my actual clients, who are the talent that he was the agent for. It can be viewed in several ways, and by respondent's own concession, at least a portion of his negotiation occurred in California, tipping the scale to California. Further, the place of subject matter, place of performance and place of subject matter, I think that analysis holds true for both. And again, I would urge the court, though it's unpublished, to look at the matter of Hillcrest, which was decided by this court and was pretty on par with the point with the facts set forth here.
But don't we send a dangerous message if we say it doesn't matter if you've negotiated between commercial parties a choice of law agreement, that we're just going to say we don't look at it, as long as you come in and point to your home state law, Washington residents lose?
I think the court has an important balance to strike here between those two important interests. One being that we don't want to encourage parties to avoid their obligations. Here you've heard Mr. Anderson's counsel say that he practices in New York, is equally not licensed in New York. It seems to me that Mr. Anderson, through his corporations, is trying to use Washington law as a shield to avoid the onerous obligations under talent agency laws across the country. And I believe that this court should not sanction that conduct by upholding summary judgment. And for that reason, we ask the court to reverse and award attorney's fees to appellants.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.